Hello, everyone, KGVM audience. Thank you for listening to our program, Health and Happiness. It comes to you on Monday evenings at 7 p.m. and Thursday mornings at 10 a.m. on KGVM 95.9 FM and on KGVM.org on the Internet. You can listen to the program again by going to KGVM.org once it is placed in the archives. I am Dr. Arliss Wood, psychologist, with Dr. Suzanne Wood, speech-language pathologist. Our emphasis is mental health, but health and happiness in general is always the topic. The Montana Psychological Association Public Education Committee gives its endorsement to the program, and we appreciate that. And thank you to the KGVM Everything Guru, Bob Wall. Now today's program, Dr. Suzanne introduces it.
Sean entered prison as a ninth grade New Yorker with a 24-year sentence. He said he had little hope in himself or any sort of redemptive future. But when he began reading children's books to fellow inmates and teaching them how to write letters to their loved ones, Sean witnessed how learning created a flicker of joy amid the isolation. Soon, he enrolled in an organization called Hudson Link, a degree-granting program in prisons, and took college classes. Through that experience, he saw how the minds and hearts of individuals transformed through education and how it helped them learn about themselves. After Sean was released, he went on to earn 400 credits from Nyack College and two master's degrees from New York Theological Seminary and Hunter College. In 2007, Sean Pica returned to lead Hudson Link as its executive director. And today, Hudson Link's programs provide education to thousands of men and women in prison, less than 2% of whom return to prison, compared to the rate of 68% nationwide. This work saves New York taxpayers over $21 million per year, and that number continues to increase. Today, we are privileged and honored to have a young person with us who has life experiences that can help inform us how to be a part of helping to turn the tide of prison experience to a productive and inspirational life. Welcome, Ezekiel Torres. We're so happy to have you.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me.
We also have a worker with Cedars Creek Integrated Health, Katie Stites, who's in the trenches providing services to combat drug abuse, prevent recidivism, and help those struggling for a better life. Welcome, Katie.
Hi, I'm very happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
We're always interested in areas of mental health, and particularly since there's a lot of information in the media about use of drugs, addictions, its effect on health and welfare, and Ezekiel, if you don't mind, can you tell us your story, and then we may interrupt you with questions.
Okay. For me, it started when I was about 15 years old. Just the environment I grew up in Florida. I grew up in an environment where selling drugs and drug use was highly acceptable, and crime was just rough. I mean, it was poor. I went to prison at 17 in Florida. Got out when I was 25, and that was the first time I went to prison. And for me, it just had such a negative impact on my whole thought process and my whole upbringing. And I don't know, it just just really destroyed my whole way of living and thinking. Then I went through a time, I don't know, when I worked and stuff, and I tried to stay out, but I kept going to prison. My drug use continued to get out of control. And, yeah, I've just done a lot of prison time and gone through a lot of stuff mentally to overcome that.
Mm-hmm. When did you first find the hope for change that something could... Was there any one thing or was it an accumulation?
It's an accumulation. So when I first got here to Montana, I went to prison in 2014. And I was sent to a drug program called CCP, Connections Correctional. It's Connections Correctional. So I went there, and at the time, the program they were running with it was a shame-based program. And I wasn't receptive to it at all. And about a year and a half ago, I was sent there again on another drug case that I accumulated. I was sent there, and they changed the whole program to a science-based program. And when I was there, I mean, it was just different. Like they just came at me with kindness. And for a person who's been incarcerated for a large part of their life, it's hard for you to meet people who are actually good to you that don't have to be good to you. So that kind of opened my heart, started chipping away at me. After that, I was sent to the Bozeman pre-release, the Transitional Living Center here in Bozeman. And there they run a type program. And it's crazy just because at first I didn't understand it. I mean, just the scheduling, just the treatment that was involved into it. I didn't understand it at first. And I was told that I had to do I had to do Cedar Creek. And I was at, which is the treatment center here. And at first I wasn't receptive to it at all. And when I got here, it was just crazy just because people were actually kind and good to me. And I think the biggest impact that it had on me, that I had in the beginning, was the kindness. Again, it's like someone that's been in prison a long time. And I mean, people aren't just generally kind to you, from correctional officers to things like that. So it's hard to be receptive to things, you know? And the biggest thing that hit me was the kindness and the people willing to help. So I think that's definitely what kind of turned things around for me.
You know, the word kindness, in different kinds of programs or talking to people or listening to testimonies of different things that have happened to them, it appears that an act of kindness is something that turns it around. Yet there's so little of that, it seems, that we hear, whether it be in politics or in the news. It's just simply showing kindness to someone. So you mentioned that the other program was, I think you said, shame-based. And so that, of course, just increases tension and anxiety. Kindness does the opposite. And your testimony shows that.
It's like one person, was talking to his psychologist, and he said, coming out of prison, it's like climbing Mount Everest in your bare feet. Just you have very little to go forward with. And so it seems like getting you to a kindness agency made all the difference for you, Ezekiel.
Yeah, absolutely. It did, because, I mean, in prison, people are only kind to you when you're aggressive, because they have to be. Like, they have to be. You're kind of put in the mode of aggression, and you have to be aggressive to get your way. When you get exposed to a whole different lifestyle with people who are kind to you when they don't have to be, that kind of does something to you. It breaks everything down. And it helped me be receptive to treatment, to help, to therapy. You know, before it was hard to be receptive when someone's trying to just stack on my shame. And one of the biggest things that I learned here is that if the person that I was yesterday doesn't have to be the person that I am today. If I change my behaviors, my thought, my patterns, if I change everything and become a better person, I don't have to worry about the person I was yesterday or the shame that I have. You know what I mean? Like, I don't have to carry that no more. And having to getting rid of that guilt and that shame and moving forward and not making those same mistakes or making those same choices has really changed things and changed my whole outlook on life, period.
Was it difficult to let go of that shame and and sadness you felt about people being unkind?
Actually, I think I was ready. The thing was with the kindness. I'll be honest with you, kindness. I mean, kindness and goodness. Like when you see genuine good people and you haven't been around good people and you see the glow, like just how they walk, how they talk, how they're consistently kind and grateful and helpful. And just, I mean, that changes everything. It breaks your heart down. Like there's nothing, I could say kindness and goodness is something that we don't see too much, being exposed to prisons and the criminal justice system for so long and being, you know, just being a part, like being out there in the street and stuff, like you don't really see that. So when you're actually exposed to genuine kindness, that just breaks you down and it just becomes easy to be receptive to change.
I love hearing that. Describing some people coming out of prison that might have to go back in for some minor problem they have. The psychologist said they have no job. They steal things like toothbrushes. They steal deodorant. It's crimes that make you want to cry because they haven't had the help they need. And it sounds like somehow you're one of those fortunate ones who was able to find some help. But I think you had to open your heart and search it out and comply with the recommendations to reach out. Good for you, Ezekiel.
Thank you.
And Katie, we're so happy to have you here. Talk about how you came to be interested in this line of work.
Well, I was in the food and beverage industry for 20 plus years. Working in bars your whole life can become somewhat of a toxic environment. I had some of my own personal struggles, which eventually led to a severe substance use disorder. I lived in Big Sky at the time, but I was looking for help. I mean, I was ready to get help myself, and I called everyone I possibly could in the Gallatin Valley, and no one called me back. There were no resources. And if there were, they were overrun, maybe. I eventually ended up calling an 800 number that, you know, was for alcohol help. And I ended up in Florida myself at a rehab center. And right then I decided that I wanted to be a resource. I didn't know how I was going to do it, because waitressing was all I knew, bartending. So when I got back to Bozeman, the only job I could find where I felt competent was working in the dining room at a senior living home. So I worked there for a little while and found a restaurant group that supported the culture of being sober. So I worked there to pay my way through school, and here I am. A couple years later, we've been trying to build the community here to support other people who are struggling, you know, basically walk side by side with someone, because it is a huge struggle to go through going through recovery by yourself.
It sounds like maybe one of the only ways to get through it typically might be with the help of others who fully understand.
Absolutely. And it's not, you know, substances are a solution to an underlying problem a lot of the times. And I say it a lot. We're all just human beings trying to survive in this world, and you cannot do it alone. I think that's one of the main things that we do here at this clinic. You see a lot of mental health facilities open 9 to 5. You know, we're here from 6 a.m. till 9 at night because we're here for the clients. We're here, do you need a driver's license? It's really trying to figure out the life problems that can become so overwhelming and help everybody get through that.
Which is one of the biggest hang-ups we've heard for people in a drug abuse or coming out of prison, is just the basics of maybe even a place to stay or how to get today's breakfast or lunch. Not to speak of clean clothes to go apply for a job.
Absolutely. And those are all services. We look at the person as a whole. It's completely client-centered. We have an amazing team here that works together. Our peer support specialist, Jana, our case manager, Angie, all of the clinicians here, and Zeke can attest to this. He's worked a lot with the rest of the team as well. But everybody really is just trying to focus on how, and I think a big part of it is getting people who come in the doors, because they are some of the most kind-hearted, genuine people you will ever meet in your life, who are just going through struggles. And it's how do we get them to see their value.
Tell us about your program, the services that are offered, and how does it get funded? How does it support itself?
So Cedar Creek is a privately owned company. We have a sister company, Recovery Centers of Montana. They're an inpatient facility up in Kalispell and Columbia Falls and Hungry Horse. So we also have a 3.3 facility up in St. Ignatius, and we all kind of work together, but it's mostly privately owned. We also have funding from the alcohol tax dollars in Gallatin County, which has really allowed us to put people in intensive outpatient here, which, you know, living in Bozeman, the cost of living is extremely high, but we've definitely, as a group down here, have tried to find ways to make it affordable or try to give scholarships to clients that can't afford it.
I really totally respect and love those efforts. And tell us, Ezekiel, how did you come to get connected with this group?
So like I said, I said earlier, I was sent from Montana State Prison to Corrections Connections Facility. Then I was sent to the Bozeman pre-release, which is Gallatin County Reentry Center. And from there, they made it mandatory that I came here, right? Which was, you know, like I got, in the beginning,
He was not happy.
Yeah, I was not happy. You know, I was thinking, okay, you know, I had the mindset, well, here goes the system again, trying to put me someplace. And, you know, and I didn't realize that everything was just falling into place where it was supposed to be. At the time, I wasn't strong in my faith, and I didn't know that I was exactly where I was supposed to be. And now, you know, saying looking forward, I mean, everything was put in place for a reason. And, you know, and I had a little struggle at first because the finances, I had to actually pay for it myself. And at first I was like, the prison's making me go through this. Why do I have to pay for it? You know, a salary. But I didn't realize how important investing in myself was going to be, just because just coming here, when you invest your own money, when you invest your own, it's just different because you're actually, I'm like, okay, hold up. I'm going to pay attention to these classes. I'm going to pay attention to this, and I'm going to get everything that I need to because I'm actually paying for this. And that made me a lot more receptive to things because I had something actually invested into the program. So just investing in myself, I was, and just the kindness, the general kindness that I got from the people here. And I don't even have to be here no more, but I still come every week. I still set up my appointments. I tell them all the time, I'm here for life. Like, honestly, like the support that I get here is incredible. And I know that I wouldn't be in the place where I'm at right now if it wasn't for the support that I received here. I did not understand at all how important it is to have a support system. And just being here, they provide all the support that I need. I mean, they've helped me with my Social Security. If I needed a ride while I was to get around, they would be there. I mean, at any time that I could call if I'm having mental health issues, situations, they'll see me. Like, the doors are always open. And like I said, like, I will be a part of this place for the rest of my life, because this is where I feel comfortable at. This is where I know that my sobriety is a life journey, and I'm just happy here. I'm truly happy here. I have everything I could ever want in my life right now. These people right here are just a big part of me having everything that I could possibly want.
One of the things I noted in reading about Cedar Creek was that they don't have a termination point for their clients, those they help. that they'll continue as long as that person feels connected and needs and benefits from that connection. And you're living testimony there, Ezekiel.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate everyone here.
In what way are you passing this gift on?
Was that, I'm sorry.
In what way are you passing this gift of family on to others? You tell others about it? Are there things that you're doing to help the others?
I do. See, I do tell everyone about it. But so when I first got here, I was focused on working and trying to get myself in a position somewhere where I could make the best for my finances. But as my journey went through here, I got better. Right now I'm enrolled to be an addictions counselor. If everything goes right, I should start school in the spring semester. And I just want to continue this. All the people have helped me, and I want to make sure that I do the same thing back. So I want to have a career in licensed addiction counseling. I want to be a counselor. I want to help people. And yeah, at this moment, that's where my journey is right now.
Do you intimidate anyone with your physique?
No, so I don't try to be like, I don't know. No, I hope not. I really hope. I hope I don't.
His kind eyes belay all those, body muscles that are so impressive. You look at him and you know he's just a sweetheart, and we've found that to be true. We've enjoyed talking with Ezekiel.
Tahiti, are you a bodybuilder too?
I am not. I'm actually probably more than half the size of Ezekiel.
So, Katie, tell us about what it takes to work with your program and if you need volunteers and, how people could help with this effort.
So to get into the program, you can go online at cedarcreekintegratedhealth.com and fill out an intake packet, or you can come into the office. We have intake packets here, and then you get set up with a counselor and kind of go from there. Everything really varies on what kind of help people need. And we do get people that come in and need resources other than substance use assistance. And in that case, we would point them in the direction, kind of networked with other community members around here and still trying to expand that network throughout the community.
There's some great helping agencies, I'm sure, that you partner with, HRDC and the Help Center. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And Cedar Creek is still a pretty new business. So that's something we're really working on right now, is just creating a web of people so we can all kind of be on the same level in the community and help each other. But we're constantly, it's grown. When we first started, it was literally just me in this office, and there wasn't even a receptionist at one point. And we've now grown to 12 staff members in this office, constantly needing new clinicians, peer support, care managers, admin staff. So if there's anybody in the community that wants to help, we're trying to build a team just to help others in the community.
What are the main addictions out there?
Oh, well, there's all kinds. The drugs that are in the world today, it's devastating what it's done to people. But we definitely see, especially in this area, it's increased quite a bit since COVID, even, I would say, with alcohol. And we have the fentanyl, methamphetamines. We kind of see a wide range.
Yes, we had the statewide suicide prevention coordinator, Carl Roston, on, who said that since COVID, there's been a 400% increase in youth suicide rates. So that COVID situation did have a big impact on people's mental, emotional health and on possible addiction setups. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And like Zeke said, you know, when you're going through this kind of thing, there's a lot of guilt and shame. And I say it to a lot of people, one of the hardest things to do in life is ask for help. But again, we cannot do it alone. And there are people that want to genuinely help. So we are always here for anyone that needs assistance. And if we can't provide it, we'll find out where to get it.
What age range do you treat?
We actually teach juvenile, minor in possession classes. So anywhere, I would say, from, you know, 14 to 100, we could, you know, 105. Okay. Mm-hmm. But we don't do as much work with the younger population. We have kind of partnered with Big Sky Youth Empowerment. So we absolutely will work with teens. It's just a matter of what services they're looking for.
Do whole families ever come in, or is it just individuals?
So we don't do family therapy, but a big part of substance use treatment planning is having the family involved. So we have definitely had sessions with family members present. And we'll try to help explain and give education on what their loved one is going through.
I'm especially appreciative of the direction you've helped Ezekiel take to begin an education process. One study by Emory University found that individuals who complete some high school courses while in prison reduce their recidivism rates or return to prison rates around 55%. Vocational training in prison cut recidivism to 30%. If they worked and got an associate degree, the rate dropped to 13% recidivism. With a bachelor's degree, it reduced to 5.6%, and with a master's degree, there was zero recidivism. So an opportunity to learn, to acquire skills, to turn your heart toward others, trying to achieve these goals, all of that is I think, greatly enhanced by education, as we're seeing in this study.
That's incredible. Some incredible statistics. I would actually give our peer support specialist some props on this. She's been working really hard to get, college in the hands of our clients and working on a program to get students enrolled that want to be enrolled. We've had people come through here who most have not received a high school diploma. And we've had a client finish nursing school, and we have about 8 to 12 clients right now who are enrolling for an addiction counseling program, which is extremely exciting. And I think her main goal has been, before they're out of pre-release, to get them enrolled so you don't get back into the daily grind of work and totally lose what your goals were to start with. So and we're really proud of Zeke for the work that he's done with that.
Is there any particular educational institution that is really very helpful in addiction counseling training around here?
So Montana State has an addiction counseling program. We've actually been meeting with them. They have a very strict admissions process, which is understandable. They've been working with us, and we're trying to create a program to get Gallatin Community College involved with, once we can get them into Gallatin Community College and have people show that they can be successful, slowly move them to Montana State. We've also been working with Dawson Community College out of Glendive. We have about 7 clients who are going to be going there to do their AA program.
We've seen that little college at Glendive. It's just a bustling place, yes. Great.
Yeah, they've been really helpful. The woman that runs the program, she's done a lot of work with people who are still incarcerated. So it's been nice to work with her and see where her program has progressed.
I personally can't think of anything much more rewarding than helping people to start on a new life's pathway and to reach out and help others. And particularly, Ezekiel, with your experiences and knowing that the thing that first attracted you and allowed you to become involved was simple kindness. I think that's very powerful, Ezekiel.
Go ahead, Ezekiel.
No, definitely, definitely. I think it starts off with kindness, especially with people that have no like ulterior motive. I mean, that's definitely impactful to a person who struggled or has been in environments where people aren't generally the best, you know?
So you can almost tell when someone offers something, if they have a secondary reinforcement, they want something from you, or if they're doing it just because they know it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, definitely. You become hyper aware, especially the more dangerous the environment you come up in, or the worse the prison situation is, you become hyper aware to people's body language and people's motives, and looking behind the words and actually reading their body language to see what it is. But luckily for me, I don't have to think like that anymore. Like, and I'm not gonna lie, this town's also great. This town nurtures that in a person, because you don't have to walk around with a chip on your shoulder in this town. People in this town have been incredible. I mean, extremely non-judgmental. I mean, this community is a great community. And once you're awake and once you're aware, like, you really want to do your part. I want to do my part to make sure that I continue showing that same kind of love that I've gotten since I've been here. I want to continue that same momentum and show that I'm not going to walk around here and be negative when everyone in this town has been good to me, you know? And it's like, I mean, people are welcoming. I mean, it's the whole place is, I don't know, it's weird. It's just a melting pot here in Montana, right here in Bozeman. And it's just been incredible, the support that I've gotten from everyone out here. And like I said, this town has been in extremely supportive of everyone that I've seen. So, I mean, it's just different out here.
That is lovely to hear, Ezekiel, and we appreciate your heart. And it makes me wonder, have you reached out to your family members to let them know the changes you're seeing and the new light that's shining on your pathway? Have you been able to touch them with these changes?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've been with my wife 19 years. We have a 15-year-old son and a 16-year-old daughter. They also live with me here in Bozeman. But see, I've been lucky. Like, I give thanks to God. You know, like, I don't deserve a lot. Like, I don't know. Sometimes I feel like I've been blessed because I've had an extremely large support system. I have, you know, a good friend base. I have a wonderful support system with my parents, my wife, my children. I've been lucky in that sense, you know. And they see my everyday. They see it, and they see it because we're prospering. We're moving forward. And life is the best it's been for me since I was a child. And for all of us, I mean, all of us, everyone's happy, definitely.
So your wife has seen you go up and down throughout this for a long time.
Yeah, she's been with me through my best and my worst. And right now, we're enjoying, like, we get the chance to enjoy the best me. So
that is purely golden, and bless her, and bless you, Ezekiel.
Definitely, because I put her through a lot. Yeah.
Well, I'd like to ask Katie. You have staff, you have training, but I noticed in looking it over, there are all kinds of services. Could you kind of give an overview of each of the services when needed that you might present for someone, and maybe give us then a connecting phone number and address, office, whatever, so that people out there could get their pencil ready and jot down that information?
Sure, absolutely. So we do outpatient services for substance use disorders, anyone struggling with alcohol or drug issues. And that's, you know, meeting with a clinician or counselor one-on-one. We have intensive outpatient services, which is psychoeducation groups, skills groups. We do those 5 days a week. And we also have our DUI ACT program. So anyone, I don't know if you guys have heard recently, but Bozeman is, or Gallatin County is the number one county in the United States for alcohol issues. And
yeah, we've known it way up there in alcohol and drug abuse, yeah, for years now, unfortunately. Yeah.
So for DUIs, we teach 2 classes a month. We have about 30 clients for each class for those. And so we also teach the MIP classes for any minors that get in trouble with the law or through the university. We have MRT, which is moral recognition therapy. And that's for anyone who's been an offender for domestic violence or a PFMA. And then we have anger management as well.
All powerful. Aspects.
Yes. And yes. So to get in contact with us, phone number is 406-600-5007. And we are located at 2216 Boot Hill Court, suite number 3. It's right across from the probation office, if anybody knows where that is.
Well, that's helpful. And your hours again?
We are usually here from around 6 o'clock to 9 o'clock at night, except for Fridays.
That's excellent because, you know, if we have a job, those hours free us up to be able to go before or after work and add a lot more than the 8 to 5 routine.
Yeah, and that's really, I mean, like I said, we really try to work for the clients here. And if we're going to try to make their, you know, we're not here to try to make life harder. We definitely want to make it more accessible for them to get help. So when you need an appointment, we've definitely worked on Saturdays as well. So we try to work with everyone's schedules.
Is there any partnership with HRDC, like the homeless shelter?
We definitely, I don't think we have an official partnership. I mean, right now I have about 40 mats in our group room here to bring over to them for sleeping pads. But we've been trying to make all these connections throughout the community and really get connected.
Well, we understand, and according to the Bureau of Justice Statistics, approximately 60% of formerly incarcerated individuals struggle with unemployment, and only 40% of formerly incarcerated individuals were employed in those in that study. And so what you're doing is helping people to find not just employment, that's good, but a career, hopefully, that they can persevere in working and achieving normalcy. So that kind of counseling is powerful. It's not just, I hope you get better. It's, here's how we get better.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's one of the first things we do when clients come in is we do a needs assessment. Do you need medical care? Do you need a driver's license? Do you, you know, are you looking for a church or a, you know, place for meditation? We really go through and look at the needs of each individual person and kind of go from there. If people need a job, let's find a job for now. Is there something more you want to do down the road? We look at short term, long term, and really try to just fit all the needs of each individual as a whole.
In that same Bureau of Justice study, they pointed out that communities benefit when people with a criminal record find good jobs. Poverty rates decrease, taxes are collected on earned income, and families are strengthened as the collateral effects of incarceration are minimized.
Tell me, does religion play a place in the treatment, or is that kind of individualistic, how everybody wants to approach that?
I wouldn't necessarily, you know, the Sober Living House in our community is faith-based. We actually work with Greater Impact quite a bit. We're all inclusive. I mean, if you come into our office, you'll see things hanging on the wall from Dalai Lama, and we have Native American, and definitely all inclusive here. We respect everyone's beliefs, and, you know, again, each individual is their own individual, so that's kind of how we want to keep our practice.
We hear a lot, or I see a lot of information regarding Native American addiction that is very high. Any perspective on that?
I mean, it's definitely, you know, addiction can touch anyone. And like I said, we try to be all inclusive here. We bring in Wellbriety groups, which is the Native American version of AA. So that's part of the all inclusive. We try to bring tools in here that you may not relate to, but somebody else will, and try to just give every client here all the tools that they could have, whether that's, you know, we had an Eastern medicine man come in for one group and a yoga instructor. And definitely try to bring all the tools to the clients that we can find.
What is the breakdown of male to female ratio for your program?
As far as clients, I feel like it's pretty even. The male to female in group, our groups rotate quite a bit. So sometimes it's extremely heavier on the female side, and sometimes it's male. So it really just depends on who's struggling at the moment as to what the ratio is going to be.
We know, Ezekiel, that you were specifically referred with a command to go, but if somebody hearing this program was just interested, does one need a referral in order to be a part of this? Or could those who are struggling with these issues just come and knock on the door?
No, trust me, the door's open, so you don't even have to knock.
Okay.
You don't even have to knock. The door's open. There's going to be someone waiting with a smile and just waiting to help you. Like, definitely, you don't need any referrals. You just need to just come. Like, just come. Like, I'm telling you, just come. And just come with an open heart. I mean, just come with an open heart. Like, just give it a try. I mean, sometimes life, it just feels like you ain't got no way out. But definitely come. And you will find an avenue. If your heart's open, if you're receptive, you will find a way. You'll make it through it, definitely.
I know in my line of work in the past that people do various things because of just a deep emotional pain they have. Like, for example, the suicide impulse oftentimes is acted upon because one is so much emotional pain that they just don't think rationally and just think this is a way out. So people get into alcohol, drugs, different other kinds of behavior because of pain. But I do also know that if you're in a culture where everyone around you is doing it, it could be for a different reason, perhaps just because someone else is doing it, you're going to do it too to be accepted. How would you speak a little bit about how this begins in a person, a young person or otherwise?
As far as the suicide situation with myself, I could only talk about myself. And the only time where I felt suicidal was when my drug use was out of control, taking like pain pills and fentanyl, things like that, just because the depression hits, like it just hits different. It's even when you're coming off of it, withdrawals, like my body was working a certain way, my mind was working a certain way, where never in my life would I ever thought that suicide would even be optional. I actually just wanted to get rid of the pain so bad, but it was mostly induced by the withdrawals from the drugs. And the only time that I even had that thought for me, it was on the drugs, like I've never been sober and thought of suicide. But definitely the drug use has a lot to do with the way that your brain works. For me, it did. And it made me have those thoughts. But I've never had those thoughts outside of using drugs, like especially downers, pain pills and, you know, pain pills and stuff like that.
One of the studies that I quote a lot on this show was people in New York City. You know, there are a lot of big bridges over the river there, downtown New York. And this was a follow-up study from people who jumped from the bridge in an attempt to die by suicide, and somehow they survived. And the researchers asked them how they felt about that. And in every single case, they said that on the way down, they realized it was a terrible, terrible mistake. And what came from that study is, it's not that people want to die by suicide so much as in that moment they want to escape from the pain, like you were saying, Ezekiel. And so if only they could find a light like this program might provide, if only they could be able to reach out in that moment where they were so distressed and in such pain, we might be able to avert these high suicide rates that we have in Montana. And again, this is one reason we really appreciate programs such as this, and we really appreciate you, Ezekiel, and your heart that reaches out to try to help others see the light here.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
What advice would you give to young people who want to be accepted in a group? And to do so, it seems that everybody is doing something with substances. What's the best way of getting their attention and that this is not the way to go?
My advice would be work on your true self-esteem. Like, for myself, I didn't start building my self-esteem until I started overcoming challenges. So I truly started overcoming challenges, doing things that I didn't want to do in order to be successful. Like, the biggest thing that helps me is doing things I'm uncomfortable with. If I'm uncomfortable with something positive, and there's something positive that's in my life, I go ahead and do it. Once I do it, I overcome those challenges. And then from those challenges, I build true self-esteem. My biggest advice is don't be scared to be challenged. As far as something positive, when something positive comes in your life and you feel uncomfortable to do it, do the right thing. Like, just push yourself through it. And then you'll build something that's, to me, was just true self-esteem. Once I was able to overcome those challenges, once I was able to move forward, once I was able to believe in myself that I could overcome this and get through it, then I actually built true self-esteem in myself. To me, that was the biggest thing. Like, work on your true self-esteem. Like, work on yourself. And don't worry about what other people are doing. Just work on yourself.
So if it's hard to do, don't turn away from it, but do it. Make an effort. See what you can do.
Definitely. Definitely. It's just like the mind has to be challenged. The body, for it to grow, you have to challenge it. You have to put it through things to overcome obstacles and to grow bigger or to grow smarter, to grow whatever. We have to be challenged. And if we're scared to be challenged, I mean, for me, if I was scared to be challenged, I wouldn't grow mentally. I wouldn't grow physically. I wouldn't be able to grow at all. You know, I'm not scared of the challenge right now. I mean, don't get me wrong. Challenges might make you nervous, but everyone gets nervous at something new. Everybody isn't going to be fully confident, but as time goes on, you could overcome challenges and you'll believe in yourself.
So in order to do the exercise that you do, it sounds like to me it's very hard and painful, but you do it anyway.
Yeah, definitely. And I enjoy it now. I enjoy a challenge. I mean, because that I know that's how I could grow physically and mentally. I look forward to it.
That is very excellent modeling for anybody out there struggling right now, Ezekiel.
Was that one more time, ma'am?
We really appreciate that you're setting the model for people out there trying to figure out what to do next.
Yeah, thank you.
We have a little over 5 minutes, maybe 7 minutes to go. What would you guys like to talk about in that time? Do you have a topic that we haven't hit upon?
Well, you were asking about young people and what direction, and I was just curious as to what Zeke tells his kids about peer pressure and growing up.
Well, I don't know, but for my kids, I don't know, I'm lucky my son, like, for my son's been training, he's been boxing since he was, I think, 9 years old. And so he's kind of strong on overcoming challenges. Right now, dealing with my family is just, it's kind of new to me. Like, I've been gone away from their life for the last 3.5-4 years. So it's kind of new to me. Right now, I'm just trying to be a father in the home and just trying to be there, like just being there so they know that they have a solid foundation. The biggest thing for me, I just want to show my kids a good example. So I don't know. I'm working on building habits, staying consistent, and making sure that my kids see a consistent, positive father in their life. That way that they could grow up with a two-parent home and they know what it is to they can see what it takes to be successful. Like, for me, I just try to let my example show to my children.
You said your son is into boxing?
Yeah. My son, yeah. He just competed in Wichita, Kansas at the Junior Olympics about a month and a half ago.
Whoa.
Yeah, he's pretty good. Yeah, I'm proud of him. I'm also proud of my daughter, too. She's doing good. They're both in high school. She works. I have incredible children. I've been blessed and I'm thankful for that. They've had a really good, strong mother that's really gave them good direction in their life and was able to do as I've been going through my struggles, she's been able to really set the good example, set the right example for my children so that my children could be the people that they are right now.
So they have really built character.
Yeah, they definitely have.
That predicts a good, wonderful future going forward, the impact of positivity. And I truly believe the example you're setting now is a huge asset for them as well, Ezekiel.
Yeah, thank you.
So many good themes have come out of this interview today. Random acts of kindness. I've heard that said many times. Kindness is something that seems to be not out there so often, but you complimented Bozeman for having a lot of kind people here. We agree. The themes of never giving up and going back and back and back and forth until you finally decide to go ahead and take the challenge. If it's hard, do it anyway, making an effort. Seek out help. We're not loners. We're not just individuals. We have to depend on the social group. Look for programs like you guys have at Cedar Creek to get involved. If it doesn't work the first time, don't give up. Do it again. What would you add to that list?
One of the big things I would add to that is just remember that we don't have to be mean to each other. Like, we're all neighbors. We're all members of the community, the same community. At the same time, we might have different political views or might whatever, but we still want the best thing for everyone. We still want the best thing for our country. We still want the best thing for our community. And just remember that, just that we can have different opinions, but at the same time, ultimately, we don't have to be mean to each other. We can be good human beings and be good to each other. And that's definitely going to change everything. Like, it's just being good to each other. That's what's had the most impact in my life, is good people. And I just want to continue spreading kindness, because I think with kindness, like, it'll change the whole world. It'll change the whole outlook. Like, we don't have to be mean. Like, we don't have to be bad to each other. We don't have to be mean to each other. And it's just, I don't know. To me, that's the simplest form I could put it.
Does it need to be put any differently from that ever? That's extremely powerful and just what we need to hear. And Katie, we appreciate you being with us too. Would you be able, in our last couple or 3 minutes, to go back over the phone number and address for Cedar Creek and how people could get in touch with you all?
Yes, ma'am. If anyone out there is looking for help in finding direction and, you know, struggling with substances or anything for that matter, our number is 406-600-5007. And the address is 2216 Boot Hill Court, Suite Number 3.
We want to thank you all so much for being on the program. We've watched Ezekiel at work, and he shows the same kindness and efforts at what he does in his everyday job outside of going to Cedar Creek. And we thank you, Katie, for the work that you guys do. I'm particularly interested in the training, the education that the people are being encouraged to do, like getting a degree. As we know, the research shows recidivism gets more and more decreased as the education increases. And you guys are great. I thank you for the work you do. We want to invite the audience out there to pay attention to the needs of Cedar Creek and those seeking help, make referrals. And to our listening audience, which is a big part of the southwest corner of Montana, we thank you for listening to Health and Happiness. And we invite you to go to this show on the web, kgvm.org. You can listen to this program as many times as you want once it gets onto the archives. So, Gallatin Valley, thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time. This is KGVM Bozeman, Health and Happiness Show. The following is an addendum to the program regarding drug counseling at Cedar Creek.
Yeah, I just wanted to also mention we do not refuse services to anyone for lack of payment. We do take Medicaid, all commercial insurances, and for those who don't have insurance, we have a sliding scale fee based off of income, as well as we offer a scholarship program. And in order to apply for that, you would just have to come into the address we mentioned and fill out some paperwork.